is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired artilleryman, CBS News, visiting Professor Dickinson College and CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy, Venezuela. There is a very powerful fleet between Puerto Rico and Venezuela. Puerto Rico is the headquarters of the operation that right now is exercises. Roosevelt Roads, an old naval base, back to the 19th century and its uses. However, the Gerald R. Ford has arrived. That's a super carrier. That's the number one in the fleet right now, with its battle group joining a flotilla of missile-stuffed Arleigh Burke destroyers. There's one cruiser. There, the Marines are present in an MEU. And the Air Force has shown its cards over these last weeks. So there's a force ready to take on Mars. It's going to take on an army that has no experience whatsoever fighting anything comparable to that firepower. Very few do. However, that is the beginning of the story. And as we learned over these last decades, the end of the story has to do with insurgency, counterinsurgency, and IEDs and retreat by the U.S. military. Jeff, a very good evening to you. Welcome back. Day one, day two, the U.S. wins. Day 50, day 60, who's in charge? Good evening to you, Jeff.
Well, good evening to you, Jerome. That's the $64 question. Of course, that assumes that we have defined clearly the mission. And right now, we haven't defined the mission because so far, at least, the administration keeps talking about the interruption of illegal narcotics coming through the Caribbean. But the force that we have deployed that you accurately described is far superior to one that's required for that mission and far different than you require for that mission. And looks like a force more designed for a regime change. We have the largest military force in the Caribbean since the Cuban Missile Crisis. But the day after the occupation, if you do that, it's going to be the day you have to consider right now. And then you have to define the mission and tailor the force for that. Estimates, I would suggest, say, a population of 29 billion people, you're going to need a force of at least probably 60 to 100,000 for the occupation. There is going to be some fighting on day one and day two of that particular effort, as you suggest, because of the character of the Venezuelan military, about 100,000 military, paramilitary, some not insignificant air defense, S-300s and shoulder-fired systems, some fighter aircraft, nothing the U.S. Navy Air Force can't handle. But you're probably going to have casualties, and then you have to come ashore. And it's not surprising the Marines are involved in the Caribbean in a week-long amphibious training exercise in Trinidad and Tobago at this very moment. So you have to come ashore on a hostile shore. You have to occupy. Then the hope is, of course, that the government returns, Ms. Machado and others, and that they can quickly take over that particular government, allowing the United States perhaps some easy way to then depart. But that assumes a number of things. That assumes that people are not loyal to Maduro to a period of time. I think many may be. That assumes that they will accept Ms. Machado. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. Key question is, what does the Venezuelan military do? And if they just dissolve, which they might, then the U.S. military is going to have to be involved in some form of occupation duty just to provide basic security. And then last but not least, don't forget, this is a country that is already in very, very severe economic straits. So who provides the essential economic underpinning for Venezuela for that Machado government to have any possibility of success if, in fact, it's successfully installed?
The narco-terrorism gangs are not loyal to this or that country. They work for bosses. They work at the power of a gun. They stretch from Brazil across the north of South America into Central America, down the Andean chain. They're everywhere. And they fight for money and because if they don't fight, they'll be killed by their rivals. That is what the U.S. military is up against. Jeff, you were trained by West Point. You fought a combat in Central America, in Central Asia. Is the U.S. Army ready to take on narco-terrorism who have no rules of engagement and kill women and children as calling cards?
It'd be a difficult proposition to say, at the least. Obviously, the sort of counterinsurgency, which is not terribly dissimilar, but you're right about rules of engagement. We fought in both Iraq and Afghanistan, but you lose that edge pretty quickly, frankly, as units move over to training on large-scale conventional warfare, which they have. Officers and senior NCOs move on to new jobs and retire. So now, even though we're only a few years from Afghanistan and Iraq, yes, we have lost a certain degree of the experience that we had in that and have been trying to learn very quickly how to deal with a battlefield that looks more like Ukraine than the one that you just did describe very clearly.
And the several months afterwards, if the IEDs start against the Venezuelan people, are we going to be called upon to exercise authority? The Treasury will be exercising authority. Is the U.S. going to be regarded by our adversaries as an occupying force?
Well, it's the old question, John, if not you, who? And I'm reminded, of course, of the pottery barn problems described by Colin Powell to then President George W. Bush as he was contemplating the invasion of Iraq. If you break it, you just bought it. So if you're not going to take care of it, who's going to take care of it? Are you going to allow the narco-terrorists to completely take over Venezuela? So the United States is kind of stuck with this problem. The one thing Mr. Trump has not tried to do at all, the best I can tell, John, please correct me if I'm mistaken, is any way, shape, or form try to make this a multilateral instead of a bilateral problem. There's been no overture to the Organization of American States. There's been no overture, certainly, to the United Nations to try to make this an international problem. Though many countries reject the legitimacy of Maduro, this is a U.S.-Venezuela problem. And even some of our staunchest allies have already backed away from the argument that sinking small boats of narco-terrorists are because they are actually enemy combatants conducting warfare against the United States. I point at the Canadian foreign minister, the French. The British have now rejected providing intelligence to the United States in the Caribbean under the Five Eyes Agreement. And then finally, of course, we've already, to some degree, escalated this conflict horizontally as well as vertically. Vertically with the arrival of the Ford, but horizontally in terms of terrain. This is not only a Venezuela problem, but as you and I were talking a few moments ago, John, this is a Colombia problem. And a significant number of the boats that have been sunk have been emanating from Colombia. Colombians have ended all military intelligence sharing with the United States. Trump administration has ended all military and other aid to Colombia. Mr. Trump has called the president of Colombia, Mr. Petro, as well, a narco-terrorist. And Colombia, of course, would offer a sanctuary for any type of force, whether it's terrorists, whether it's narco-terrorists, whether it's insurgents, whether it's alienated Venezuelan military, to conduct operations against the United States, not unlike Iran provided for Iraq or in portions of Pakistan, the tribal areas provided for the Taliban conducting operations against U.S. forces in Afghanistan.
Gustavo Petro, the president of Colombia, is out of control for his own people, has been for some time. He evidences chemical dependency and worse. He has no credibility in his own country, but he commands a military and a border with Venezuela, where the FARC and the ELN operate routinely. That describes perfectly sanctuary, which is what Iraq Shia militia had in Iraq. It's what the Taliban had in Pakistan. And Jeff, to reach back to my youth, it's what the Viet Cong had in Cambodia. Are we prepared to cross an international border in order to claim we're on hot pursuit? Is that something that can happen?
Yeah, though it could certainly happen, John, without question. And all those organizations, the FARC and others you mentioned, have great experience in conducting insurgent type of warfare, guerrilla type of warfare, and they know the terrain. The other thing that we don't have in great significance, frankly, is, best of my knowledge, internal intelligence in both Colombia and Venezuela. Now, oddly, Mr. Trump announced a few weeks ago that he was authorizing the CIA to conduct intelligence operations in Venezuela. That was a little surprising that he announced that. Perhaps he did that to kind of ratchet up tension and pressure on Mr. Maduro. But it also suggests that we didn't have any particular structure to build upon to gather that intelligence. And so we're moving against a particular area where our opponents or our potential opponents have a lot of advantages. And I think, unfortunately, we may be making the assumption that this is going to be easy and will all be over in a few weeks. And it looks to me that is very unlikely.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired CBS News, visiting Professor Dickinson College, CEO, Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. We're headed to Europe. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
keep not